Welcome to the Space Show, Russell.
Hello again, Andrew.
It's good to have you here again. Russell, what's your job at the Anglo-Australian Observatory?
Well, my title is director, which in some sense means I'm in charge of all the daily operations of the show and responsible for things. It sometimes feels a bit the other way around, that I'm everybody's servant, because whenever any crisis comes up, it lands on my desk and I have to stop doing what I want to do and fix things. I should say that personally, I think of myself first and foremost as an astronomer. I do the job because I like doing astronomy and my interest is in astronomy. But of course, there's an enormous managerial content in any job of this type, not just for the director, but for all the scientific staff at a big observatory these days. We all have to spend too much of our time, it seems, on what looks like managerial paperwork. But of course, it's all helping to make astronomy happen, and it's essential because we are spending significant amounts of money, and public governments provided money at that, so we have to be accountable for it, and we have to spend the money the best way we can. In a more direct way, we're accountable, I think, to our main customers, are the university astronomers who use the telescopes. Because the AAT is a national facility, it means that we have different astronomers coming to use the telescope every night. It's a very competitive business. In fact, twice a year we have a meeting, or a series of meetings, at which we consider applications from different astronomers from all around Australia and Britain, and indeed from other countries, who write a scientific proposal saying that what they would really like to do is study a particular galaxy or make a particular measurement or something, and they need, say, 4 nights on the telescope to do it. Somebody else will come in with a completely different proposal. And what the panels have to do is assess all these proposals for their feasibility and for their scientific importance. And typically we're oversubscribed by a factor of about 3, sometimes it gets up to 4, so it's really very competitive, and only a few of our customers get what they're asking for. And so that's actually a sort of administrative job, but that's a fun administrative job, because you're assessing science and you're helping science happen. When it gets to funding, of course, it's not quite so pleasant. If someone threatens to cut your budget, and then you have to do a lot of work writing reports or money grant applications for specific projects and so on. But again, this has to be done, and it's worth doing if the end result is that you get the resources to build a big new instrument or to do a big new experiment.
Can sometimes be said that a scientist only has a couple of carefree research years before he gets burdened down with the administration?
Yeah, I think that's very true, Andrew. I think it's true for most of us. I mean, there are a few fortunate individuals who get themselves into positions where they're able to concentrate on research for most of their careers, but there are very few jobs like that, and I don't think it's altogether bad that it should be that way, because the two avenues that are open really to astronomers are either to get to jobs working in universities, where you have to spend a fraction of your time teaching and bringing along the next generation and helping things happen, or you work, as I do, at a national facility and try to provide the tools that the astronomers need. And I think we all feel that however good we are at doing research, we're all parts of a big team, and we all have to put something back into it, so we have to take a share of helping to run the show, if you like.
You're based at Epping, a suburb of Sydney.
Yes.
And yet the telescope's in Coonabarabran. That's about 4 hours' drive away.
Yes.
Doesn't this make life difficult?
Well, it's actually a bit more than 4 hours' drive away. yes and no. In fact, for me, this was one of the attractions, not having to drive a long way to get to the telescope, but it's an awful lot nearer than it was when I lived in Britain. For many years, I did my astronomy living in Britain and coming to Australia 2 or 3 times each year for just a few nights on the telescope. To be able to do that in Australia, where I can get up in a few hours to the telescope, is a huge step forward. But of course, there are really two halves to the Anglo-Australian Observatory, and if our total staff at the observatory is about 60 people, and about half of these, about 30 people, live beside the telescopes or near the telescopes up in Coonabarabran, and they're mostly the technical staff and engineers and support people who make the telescopes work every night. And then the other half of the staff are based in Sydney, where we have laboratories for building new instruments, we have our administration, and library and our main computing facilities. Well, this is really just a practical consideration. We felt, the people who set this up 20 years ago, felt that there were big advantages in living near the telescope and having immediate access to it for keeping the telescope working at night. But equally, there are big advantages in living in a big city like Sydney, where you have access to all the high technology that you need in terms of spare parts and in know-how and expertise in different fields of electronics and computing. And so the feeling was that the optimum structure would be to split the observatory in this way. And I would say that it actually works very well. With modern communications, it's really not a problem at all. I mean, we use electronic mail, of course, to a huge extent, but much more than just mail. We now have a fast fiber optic link, so we can send data backwards and forwards between the Epping laboratory and the telescope. So in fact, since, as we said at an earlier stage, we don't actually look through this telescope with our eyes anymore, when you go to observe at the AAT, what you actually do is sit at a computer terminal and look at a computer screen or a series of screens. You can just as easily do that and see the same data on the screens in the computers in Sydney, in fact. And so from the point of view of actually seeing the astronomical data coming in and so on, you could, if you wanted to, do it almost as easily from Sydney or Coonabarabran or indeed anywhere else in the world.
Well, do you have to, I mean, can you actually do it from England?
You could do it in England. It hasn't been done. We weren't set up that way. Well, it's not quite true. It has been done in a mode that we call eavesdropping. We don't have the full remote operations, if you like. It isn't possible for someone in England to come in through the internet and take control of our telescope, which is just as well, because goodness knows what would happen to us if people did find a way of doing that. But the telescope wasn't designed to be remotely operated, so we always have staff actually controlling the telescope, and so opening the shutter, pointing the telescope in the right direction, making sure everything's working. But we have had nights where, for example, an astronomy team are trying to get spectra of a particular star or group of stars. One of the team comes to Australia, gets the spectra, and as soon as he's got a result, he sends it electronically back to the rest of the team in England, and while he continues with the observations of the next star, the team in England can analyze the result from the first star. And then they can come back to him and say, hey, look, you know, you didn't get that quite right. We'd like another exposure because there wasn't what we call signal-to-noise wasn't good enough. The information isn't quite good enough. Or they could say, well, look, it would be better if you looked at another part of the spectrum. If you're taking spectra, you might want to look at the red end instead of the blue end, for example. And so they can tune the observations during the night. And I think this is a way of the future that we will see used more and more.
That's a big difference from the days of photography, when you're perhaps exposed a plate for 3, 4, 5 hours and then, you know, developed it and maybe didn't have access to the data until the next day.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. And I think it's really important because, as I said, the time on the telescope is so fought over, so valuable, that you don't want to waste any of it. And in a sense, if you're taking photographs and you get beautiful photographs, but maybe you could have got just as good data in half the time, in a sense, you're wasting the time of the telescope. And so if you want to maximize the efficiency, you really want to be analyzing your data in as near to real time as you can. But you can't expect the astronomers to do that very well if they're worried about setting up the instrument for the next observation. So it's ideal if you've got a separate person who's just looking at the data and another one who's collecting the data and the two interacting in this way.
In addition to being the director, you're an active astronomer, an active scientist. How do you balance the two? I mean, you know, how much time do you have to spend between the two jobs?
Well, it's hard because in practice most of my time now goes on the administrative management side of the job, I have to say. And in fact, if I work 9 to 5 for a, whatever 37 or 37 and a half hour or 40 hour week or whatever it is, I wouldn't do any research. And so almost the research becomes your hobby in this situation. But most of us in astronomy, in fact, do feel that way. We're very lucky, I think, in that we've got jobs doing what we really love doing. And so we don't mind if we sit up all night using the telescopes and then still have to do some administrative work during the day. And in practice, most of the astronomers at the AAO, we try to arrange it that they get about half the time for doing research and half for helping to run the show. It has to be something like that because astronomy is a competitive career. In fact, there aren't very many permanent jobs of any sort, and young astronomers have to make their name by keeping doing research and publishing papers. And so we have to make sure that the younger people still get plenty of time for their own research. In my case, it's not so critical, and well, I'm lucky if I get 10% of my time to do research, but I do it by collaborating with other people, and then that's still at least the next best thing to doing it all yourself.
Well, I better let you get back to your work then.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us again, Russell, on the Space Show.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Andrew.